It's been nearly 54 years since my guest was called to his path. From the early 1950s, he has pursued one goal that has led him from the pyramids of Teotihuacan across the globe, through the harmonic convergence of 1987, and now toward the usherance in of a new heaven and a new earth. He's recognized around the entire planet and has written many books along the way, including The Mayan Factor, Earth Ascending, Time and the Technosphere. He holds a PhD in art history and aesthetics from the University of Chicago. He's taught at numerous institutions, including Princeton University and at the San Francisco Art Institute. He is a true liberator of magic and a shaman of an extremely high order. It is an absolute honor and a privilege to welcome him to the program, José Antonio Argüelles Valum Votan. Welcome to Radio Orbit. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, well, thanks a lot. That's a great intro, Mike, and it's great to be here with you. And as you know, I'm talking to you from New Zealand, Aotearoa, the land of the long cloud, where it's already tomorrow.
Well, thank you so much. And we don't have a whole lot of time. Speaking of time, it's all about time these days. And let's get right to it. So that's the first question, of course, Dr. Argüelles. Time, what is it? The Western idea, linear, a straight, flat line. How is your notion of time different?
Well, the reality is only like cosmic time. And the cosmic time, everything is instantaneously simultaneous. And when we speak of time, we're speaking of relative degrees of what we're doing to our consciousness. So when we talk about Western time, we're talking about the mechanization of time, the putting of time into very discrete mechanistic units, minutes, hours, seconds, nanoseconds. And this is actually a process of consciousness, because as we become addicted to this notion of time, we actually accelerate all of our perceptions, we accelerate our the mechanistic projections of our biological functions into a massive entity which we call the technosphere. And as we progress with the evolution of the technosphere, in time, as we experience it subjectively through our senses and our everyday mind, time accelerates more and more, so it seems like we have less and less time to do more and more. People are running around frantically, accomplishing what they hope are meaningful things, making what they hope is sufficient money to buy more meaningful things, and not really knowing what's going on. In fact, becoming more and more disconnected from the actual cosmic reality and their own true divine essence. So this is the type of time that we have created and invented out of our own ignorance.
And the clock is the vehicle, the mechanical vehicle.
The clock is the vehicle that that the human species used to mechanize time. Once time is mechanized, then the rest of our biological functions could be mechanized. The curious thing about that, you will notice, is that once the time was mechanized, then there was just no question. Every succeeding technological innovation was immediately grasped, cherished, and believed to be absolutely of inestimable necessity to the continued evolution of our species. The more that we became hooked on every succeeding new technology, of course, the more and more we disconnected ourselves from our true nature. So when you have a biological species that has actually become a planetary organism, much like a type of galactic virus, that is operating on a type of timing system or timing frequency that increasingly disconnects it from the natural order, well, disaster is bound to happen.
All right, the law of time. You came up with an interesting way to look at time through a different lens, so to speak, that has to do with this ratio of 13 to 20. Could you talk about the law of time?
Talk about the law of time. What we're talking about is a singular law, like the law of gravity. Like everything, the law of gravity, everything in the material world abides by that. Everything gravitates to a central point and creates denser and denser objects in space, which then we call stars and planets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and they all operate by the law of gravity. Well, the law of time is a higher unifying law that says that everything in the universe is unified, is synchronized simultaneously at the same moment. As we speak, this actual same instant of our speaking is actually occurring in an instant of time that cuts right across the universe. You say, well, the other side of the universe is 10 billion light years away or 15 billion light years away and with the Big Bang. That takes a long time to get there. But time itself, the synchronous nature of time says that in actuality, that this instant of time cuts radially through the whole universe. That through telepathy, time is what is faster than the speed of light. And telepathy travels on time waves. So by telepathy traveling on time waves, our conversation could be monitored by entities or beings of higher intelligence or consciousness, billions of light years away from us, should they be curious about what we're doing on this little sphere rolling around this little star.
How does art figure into this? You have this interesting equation that's and a wonderful image associated with it on one of your websites, and I actually should mention that really quickly, since we already mentioned the law of time, to see lots of this stuff and links to all kinds of very interesting information, everybody. Go take a look at the website, www.lawoftime.org. And there's one other one that I should mention really quickly called Tortuga, TORTUGA.com. Pardon me for that, Jose, but I wanted to get that out there. Back to our conversation, this equation, time multiplied by energy equals art.
The actual equation is energy factored by time equals art.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, everything is in the universe is synchronized in time. And as we often say, have you ever seen an ugly sunset? Have you ever seen an ugly nighttime sky? Only if human conditions are such that ugly effects are created.
Mm-hmm.
In principle, everything that exists in the universe is synchronized by time. That's what it means. Energy factored by time equals art. And everything that is synchronized by time, everything that is synchronized in time, actually has an aesthetic quality. It's actually a living, natural form of art. And you know that by looking at a rose, and you know that by looking at a flower of any kind. You know that by walking through the forest. You know that by looking at the nighttime skies. You know that just by feeling the ocean when you're alone on a beach someplace and just feel the waves coming in one after another. All this affects our perceptions. Just the way that we experience all that as a sense of what we usually refer to as beauty, that the nature itself is an unconsciously evolving work of art. We ourselves, as mediums of higher consciousness, being also evolved by this nature, are capable of creating more conscious, self-reflective forms of art.
Mm.
The more beautiful our self-reflective forms of art are, the more they conform to laws of synchronization.
Mm.
What we find most beautiful, most having most effect very often is when we are involved in some type of mass participatory event that is unified by some type of artistic performance, such as a rock concert.
Mm. I love it. It reminds me of the Platonic concept where he said that the good would also be true and would also be beautiful.
Yes, the true, the good, and the beautiful. The principles that govern the thinking of the Platonists and the Neoplatonic thinkers, and also of the Pythagoreans, who all, these people, in essence and in principle, understood what we're talking about, that energy factored by time equals not. It's just that how we came across this, how we discovered this what we call basic law of time, how we discovered it was through our study of the Mayan calendar. And the Mayan calendar, we noticed that the basic mathematical system of the Mayan calendar is based on a ratio, which we determine as a ratio frequency, a constant frequency, 13 to 20. And this constant frequency of 13 to 20 runs through everything in the universe. Everything is operating on this frequency, is being synchronized by this frequency, would be better put. And through the studies that I continued to pursue on this matter, I saw how this frequency actually runs through virtually all aspects of nature. You can see how this appears. For instance, very few of us know that in the ancient Hindus knew this, in the study of the system of what they call the nakshatras, is that the moon moves across the sky 13 degrees and 20 minutes every night. That's an example of this frequency.
Right. There are relations to the human body as well, are there not?
There definitely are. Just at a very simple, very obvious level, we live in an age of great complication, and very often it's very difficult for us to see what's right under our noses. 13, 20, we have 20 fingers and toes, and 13 major articulations in our body, 2 ankles, 2 knees, 2 hips, 2 wrists, 2 elbows, 2 shoulders, that's 12. And our neck and central column is the 13th. So
right.
We are 1320. We are what the slogan is that we say about in defining further the law of time is that time is art.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, everything that is in time, when you take the time to do something, as they say, then you are actually manifesting in an aesthetic way as an artistic form of very form of our own bodies with the 20 fingers and toes and our 13 articulations. We actually are manifestations of a higher art form. We just have not arrived at the consciousness to fully appreciate that as an individual or as a species for the most part.
What does the calendar have to do with it? Maybe we should talk about calendar reform.
Well, when we talk about calendar, most people, just take calendar for granted. Most people think that April, May, June, September, all of that, that's kind of etched in the DNA or in the cosmos, or that's, it has always been, and that's it shall always be. And give a little thought to it, which is actually what that calendar wants you to do. Give a little thought to it.
That's what all calendars are meant to do, right?
You're talking about the Gregorian calendar, which is the actual world calendar. That's the world calendar that we're operating on.
Mm-hmm.
If we live in a rational society like Mr. Spock comes from, we never would have developed, we never would have used the Gregorian calendar because, as Spock would say, why, that's illogical.
Why would he call it illogical?
Irrational. Why would a rational species that prides itself on its ability to use logic and reason and to be logical and systematic, why would it use something that's so illogical? That's the point. When we talk about illogical, we simply mean the old adage, 30 days past September, April, June, and November, all the rest of 31 except for February, and then leap year has 29. We're dealing with two systems, a system of measuring months. A month is a very inaccurate concept. The idea supposedly is that the month is supposed to correlate to a synodic lunar cycle. A synodic lunar cycle is 29 and a half days.
Mm-hmm.
The month are either 30 or 31 days, except for February, as the adage has it. Those don't clearly correspond to a celestial or astronomical cycle, if that's what the intent is. Further, the subcycle of the calendar system is the 7-day week, with the exception of February, none of the months correlates to a seven-day week. So the result is that using a measure, a yardstick, that some of the units are in centimeters, some of them are in inches. They don't conform. And as we often say, if you ask someone to build a house with a ruler like that, you'll be living in a very crooked house. And we do live in a crooked house. Our calendar is something that shapes our mind, and we live in a crooked world.
That is not the truth.
No question about it. You just have to, you know, mind my saying so. Look who's running your country.
Well, I know there was a time years ago where this was actually brought up at the UN, calendar reform and what we might do.
It was brought up in the UN up as recently as in 1956. In fact, I was just reading the other day that even in 1949, the Royal Astronomer of the United Kingdom promoted the 13-month, 28-day calendar.
Mm-hmm.
This calendar was promoted avidly in the 1930s. There was a great movement of reform in the predecessor to the UN, the League of Nations, to adopt as a new logical calendar the 13-month, 28-day calendar. The main objection to this came very vehemently, of course, from the Vatican, which has a vested interest in the Gregorian calendar.
Yes.
Who created it and who bestowed it upon the world. So, this, as I said, this was brought up to the United Nations and was presented as recently as 1956. It was brought up by the Committee on the Social and Economic Committee, and then it was tabled. Other matters, like the Cold War and the arms race, seem to have taken up more and more interest, and the matter was pushed in the background. From our analysis, the more it was pushed in the background, the more the effects of operating on an irrational system took over.
Mm.
The more the effects of operating on an irrational timing system took over, the less inclined with people to think outside the box.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about the 1328 calendar. 13 times 28 is 364. People think about 365 days and a quarter or something like that in a year. Talk a little bit more about the calendar that you would suggest that we might look at.
Well, this calendar, the 13-month, 28-day calendar, first of all, it was a calendar that was universally used by many, many prehistoric peoples before the rise of civilization. The Druids, for instance, or the ancient Incas. It was one of the 17 calendars used by the ancient Maya. The Polynesians used this calendar. You go just about anywhere and you scratch beneath the surface and you say, oh, yes, we did have that at one point. When we talk about a calendar, many people think the calendar is supposed to be an object an instrument that conforms to some type of precise astronomical measure. The problem with an instrument that conforms to precise astronomical measure is that we're looking at things from a very limited point of view and a very relative point of view, and the points of reference themselves are always changing. So it's very difficult to base something on that. The actual relationship of the moon to the earth, for instance, we talk about the synodic cycle of 29 and a half days, which is from new moon to new moon, and this is something that makes a lot of people go crazy. But there's also the sidereal cycle, which is 27 days.
Right, right.
The 27-day cycle is based on when the moon returns to the same place at a point in the sky.
Mm.
Then there's other cycles. There's an even more obscure cycle, the apsidal cycle of the moon, which is a precise 28-day cycle, and that has to do with the inclination of the pole returning to the same place every 28 days. So the point is that if you try to create a measure based on astronomical data, it will be very difficult to come to a very precise notion. A whole other realm of thinking about this is that the principle of harmonic measure, that what you're looking at basic principle of harmonic measure. When you look at the cycle of the Earth being 365 days, let's just start with the whole number there, and you'll see that 12 doesn't go into that. 12 is 360, and then 5 days are left over.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient Babylonians had a 12-month calendar that then had those 5 extra days as a five-day added on 5-day cycle. 12 months is 30 days plus 5. But if you take 365 and you divide 13 times 28 is 364.
Right.
A 7-day week, 4 weeks,
which is
28 days,
mm-hmm.
52 weeks equals 13 months of 364 days. You have a perfect harmonic congruence of units of measure. The 365th day, which was known in ancient times, is known as the day out of time. It is no day of the week at all. This is what the Vatican didn't like. In the calendar reform, they called that null day, N-U-L-L.
Hmm.
But way back in the old days, when they had that, they heard that expression, long live the king. The king is dead, long live the king. That referred to the day out of time. That on that day, the previous cycle was considered complete. There was a day when there was nothing, no cycle, and then where everything sins could be absolved, debts could be forgiven, and then the next day would be a new cycle. The king is dead, long live the king, and that's the meaning of that. So this is the same principle that we've been promoting with the 13-month, 28-day calendar, that this calendar has its what we call synchronization point corresponding to July 26th. This was originally a point that was measured as the rising of Sirius, star Sirius, with the conjunct with the sun rising on that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 364th day of the year, the 28th day of the 13th moon, corresponds to July 24th, and then the 20th, corresponding to July 25th, is then this day out of time, the 365th day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The quarter day that accrues is referred to as a total 00 day, which if you need to have that, occurs every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of that is correlated. The main point that we're talking about, if you have a harmonic standard, a harmonic system of measure, then you are actually going to be straightening out your mind. You're going to be harmonizing your mind and your life. There are much research shows that these 28-day cycles have a great galactic and cosmic validity, and that by creating a standard of measure that's harmonic and following a cyclic pattern that's harmonic, that then we will make our lives increasingly harmonic. We live a very disharmonic life. In the 13-month, 28-day calendar, the measure of the moon becomes even more precise than it is in the present calendar. And precisely every 19 years, the moon will return to the same spot on the same date on this calendar. If there was a full moon, for instance, on July 26th, In 19 years, that pattern would repeat. The point also is that with the harmonic standard, you are moving the concept of time into a higher state of consciousness, into a higher dimension of mind. And you are developing a system of what we call synchronic harmonics, the synchronization. Things become more and more synchronized. You become more and more aware of the nature of synchronicity when you follow a harmonic standard that is always placing you in harmony with the other cycles and forces of nature.
Amazing. All right, another one for you here. I've read three of your books, Earth Ascending, The Mayan Factor, and Time and the Technosphere. Time and the Technosphere blew me away. You talk about moving from the technosphere into the new sphere, or the no sphere. I'd like you to talk about that and the 1987 harmonic convergence and how these things are all related.
Well, we're talking about here, when we talk about the biosphere, let's talk about the biosphere, the technosphere, and the noosphere, and the relationship of the harmonic convergence in 1987 to these three terms, biosphere, technosphere, and noosphere, and to the critical junction that's just coming up 5 years from now in 2012.
Absolutely.
Now, when we talk about the biosphere, we're talking about the sphere of life as we know it on Earth. We can look at the planet as a sequence of spheres coming up from the core. The lithosphere, which leads up to tectonic plates, the hydrosphere, which is the oceanic system, the atmosphere, the magnetic fields. The biosphere is the sphere of life that exists as a thin film connecting the hydrosphere and the atmosphere on the crust or the surface of the lithosphere. And this biosphere, you have to understand, is a unitary system. All of life is one. It represents a spectrum of degrees of organisms from unicellular organisms up to Homo sapiens. And this represents a spectrum of processes of chemical metabolizing of different elements that are within the surface of the Earth. The biosphere can best be defined as the region on Earth for the transformation of cosmic energy. If the Earth is being continuously bombarded with solar and cosmic energy, the plants directly transmute the solar energy into chlorophyll and releasing and generating the oxygen carbon dioxide cycle. The other, those plants, those types of life are called autotrophic life. They subsist just by themselves on the minerals of the earth, on the water, and on the sunlight. The other type of life is the heterotroph. That's basically all the animal forms of life up to us. The heterotrophic life lives off the plant life. The plant life is independent. The heterotrophic life lives off the plant life. These two, what you might call great phylum of life, of existence, create what's called the biosphere. The biosphere is a continuously evolving dynamic. It is continuously processing atomic structures, molecular structures, transmuting them. Every time we transmute some form of energy into another form of energy, that actually then becomes the words coming out of our mouth as we talk. And this process of the transformation of life and the evolution of life into ever more complex forms gets to a stage where we have the appearance of intelligence. We can look at this matter again. There is inert matter and there is living matter. We represent living matter. Living matter evolves in complexity, particularly a brain and nervous system, until it reaches a point of capacity for self-reflection. This is what is called intelligence. Mm-hmm. And a species attains the capacity for self-reflective intelligence. We call that the stage of harmonization, becoming human. Now, it could be that when we use this, we don't necessarily mean that all forms of self-reflective intelligence look like us.
Right.
They could look like ET. They could take other forms. If they all have the same capacity, whatever they are, for self-reflective intelligence. When you have self-reflective intelligence, then you have a new phenomenon. You have the capacity for thought or consciousness to affect the material plane. When you have that, then you have the beginning of what's called the noosphere, the mind sphere. In other words, the processes of the mind can create images. The images can be communicated and transmitted and put into a type of form where they actually become manifest. Henry Ford thought of a car. That was an image in his head. He knew certain things and certain principles. He said, I think if I do this, 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 and this, we'll get this, we'll have a car, and it will run.
Right.
The atomic bomb was just an idea Phil Stone said, if we do this, if we split this atom here, and we contain it and put it in this type of container here, and we use it as a projectile, it will create such and such an effect, and it will scare our enemies, and it did. It still does.
Mm-hmm.
Those were all thoughts first, but they're examples of how thought affects on consciousness, which doesn't seem to have any material reality. No one has ever actually said they measured a thought or seen a thought, yet this thought, which seems to be some type of electrical charge, is able to manifest and completely impact our environment. We are experiencing today something called global climate change. And even now, more and more people, scientists, I should say, included, are in agreement. We had something to do with global climate change.
Mm-hmm.
We had something to do with global climate change because of the effect of our thought. The mechanization of time is the effect of our thought. All of this effect of our thought is the beginning creation of the noosphere. We haven't understood the power of our mind. We have just been like kids let loose in an amusement park where there's no rules and it says whatever you think you can create.
Right.
We don't know how to take responsibility for that. And now we're at the place where we have to pay the price for this type of so-called freedom. This creates the possibility of self-awareness, of self-regulation, self-reflective consciousness that will take us to the next stage of our reality, which is the noosphere. Between the biosphere and the noosphere is the technosphere. The technosphere is the unleashing of the mechanization of thought into all the different forms that we experience in the world today. First, we have the mechanization of biological functions, such as locomotion, train, bicycle, automobile, the airplane, and then we have the projection of thinking itself, of the processes of thought itself, into the computer technology, into the creation of a subsphere within the technosphere, which is the cybersphere. And the cybersphere is the world of the information technology. The cybersphere is actually the virtual noosphere. It accomplishes everything that telepathy does, except for it relies on electronic instrumentation to do so. Your noosphere is the functioning of the human organism as a single mental function, as a single mental being or entity that is operating by pure telepathic means, that it is in touch with itself wherever it is on the planet, and it is doing this without the intermediary instrumentation of the Internet. This is what is ahead of us. This is past the threshold of 2012, the pure noosphere, the evolutionary advance into a purely telepathic mental field.
Without technology.
Without reliance on this technology, which, is very costly. People should be aware of the fact that as much as they love the Internet, as much as they love MySpace, as much as they love YouTube, there's a blog that happens every 8 seconds. You can figure out how many blogs, 10,000 blogs, new blogs a day.
Mm-hmm.
There's 600 billion web pages and only 6 billion humans. The cost of that in energy is that by 2010, which is only 3 years away from now, the Internet will be utilizing one half of the electricity on the planet.
Remarkable.
You have to think about that. That's just to run our information media so we can talk to ourselves, so we can show off our egos and display all of our opinions, whether we're informed or not. And in the meantime, the energy cost is that phenomenal. The space is, without moving into nanotechnology, if the spaces that are utilized by search engines for Googleplex and these other companies take up an enormous amount of space, 500,000 square feet for a search engine. That has to be housed in remote areas where they create more ugly eyesores.
Right, right. They got to keep it all cool and all that business.
Yeah, and that's keep it cool. That's the electrical thing, is keeping it all cool.
Mm-hmm.
You just know from running your little PC how hot it gets.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. All right, 2012. Why is 2012 significant? And let's talk about the galactic core, why that's so important.
Well, the significance of the 2012 was first spoken about in the 1970s. If you look at the back of my book, The Transformative Vision from 1975, you'll see on page 301 of this, a reference to 2012 at the end of the closing of the Mayan Great Cycle of 5,125 years. A few years later, in The Invisible Landscape, Terence McKenna also arrived at the 2012 date. Some entirely different means, which I think is very important.
Yeah, through the I Ching and his whole method.
In the 1985 and 86, we talked about this, and what was significant to us is that we each arrived at that date from different means. Is that the 2012 is actually a point in time marked and known about by the ancient Mayan civilization. The call date of December 21st, 2012 is the call date to the day for Ahau in the Mayan long count. And this date marks precisely the conclusion of 1,872,000 days since the beginning of this particular cycle, just the cycle, not the end of the calendar,
mm-hmm.
beginning of this cycle on the day August 13th, 3113, or as some people have it, August 14th, 3114. Doesn't matter too much.
Right.
What we do know is that this cycle comes to close. Now people say, what is the meaning of the cycle? The meaning of the cycle, this is the cycle of history as we know it. If you went back to August 13th, 3113 BC and went around the planet, it would be a relatively pristine place. Little communities here and there, but if you went into the Nile Valley or to Mesopotamia, you would see that there are a couple of developments. The first dynasty in Egypt, 3100 BC, the first city, as it's called, this urban center in the cycle of the Uruk in present day Iraq, 3100 BC, and in India, at 3102 BC, the disincarnation of the last avatar of Krishna. And those are all right about the same time. The Mayans knew that 3113 BC is actually the beginning of a cycle. They knew, it's also interesting, you go back and read and you see that the ancient Sumerians around 3100 BC knew how to divide the day into 24-hour periods, 60 minutes each. It took some 4,500 years before it got translated into a clock.
Right, but that's when the actual
that was known at that time, and that was a knowledge that came from elsewhere that was planted here at that time, a type of star planting, which began the acceleration, the cycle of acceleration. This cycle from 3113 BC to 2012 is a cycle divided into 13 sub-cycles. Each of these is called a baktun. Each baktun, the 13 baktuns, each is 144,000 days. 144,000 times 13 is 1,872,000 days, the cycle of history. The 144,000 days is the number in the book of Revelation, and that is very specifically chosen number, the number of what's usually referred to as the number of the elect, the minimum number of those on the planet at any time during this cycle who are in operating in conformity with the truth, no matter what their spirituality or religion or whatever else it may be. The last cycle of 144,000 days began in 1618, the beginning, precise beginning of the scientific revolution,
mm-hmm.
the point in time when the clock had become standard and the beginning of the mechanization of time. Since that period in 1618, this last less than 400 years, the processes of human civilization have accelerated exponentially because of what we refer to as the establishment of the artificial timing frequency, 1260, the irregular 12-month calendar in combination with the mechanistic 60-minute hour, which has created a frequency that is both highly mechanistic and seemingly rational, the clock, and thoroughly irregular, the Gregorian calendar. So this combination of highly irregular and mechanistic has created the what we might call the crazy-making mind of the modern world.
Hmm.
Everyone has to be at work on time, but no one's really sure whether they really like their job. So that's the world. And so this cycle is seeing it comes to an end on December 21st, 2012. What does that mean? What that means is that when you look at what's happened to the planet in the last 400 years, what's happened to the planet in the last 260 years, you'll see that, particularly in the last 260 years, that we have absolutely transformed. We have become a geological force on the planet, impacting the planet like nothing ever known before as far as a biological factor affecting the actual geology, the environment, the climate. Nothing has impacted, no form of life has impacted the planet like that before, at least as far as we know, and certainly in this cycle of planetary history as we know it. And this, what we have come to is that we are in a stage where we are in an exponential curve of population, of pollution, of extinction of species, and of the actual climate change is now an irreversible fact. There will be no Arctic ice cap in the year 2040. The oceans are going to be rising, and the recent study that was put forth by the IPCC, the International Panel for Climate Change, now it turns out that they were giving us this word about the Arctic disappearing, the Arctic ice disappearing by 2040, and now it turns out that their findings, when they were presented at the end of early February, when those findings were presented, those findings were greatly modified by the pressure of national governments because they said it would create too much alarm. Well, you can weigh whether you want to create more alarm now or you want a greater panic in 2 years. And any way you look at it, we've come to a point where the processes engendered by history have come to a climactic, irreversible point where the human species no longer really has control over what it has set in motion, nor does it seem to have the moral will to be able to try to stop what it has set in motion. And so you come to an inevitable point, a climactic point, which we are now actually in the process of reaching. By 2012, you might say the bubble of history will have burst, and we will be entering an entirely new chapter of evolution. How this bubble bursts, there are many different possibilities. Certainly, certain forces are already in motion. Aspects of climate change, weather patterns changing. I heard you talking about this bee phenomenon, for instance.
Mm, yeah.
That bee phenomenon appeared on the BBC News front page.
Wow.
Last week. And it says, vanishing bees threaten U.S. crops.
Mm.
It is officially called colony collapse disorder.
That's right.
The more pithy way of describing it would be vanishing bees syndrome. And as many as 95% of the bees seem not to have shown up this year for duty.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, they look at hives and they're empty.
Bees pollinate 40% of the crops. The almond crop in California, for instance, is considered, it's not happening this year. That's big business in California.
Yeah.
This is big business everywhere. And why is this happening? This is not just in this country. Bees are disappearing all over. You find out that they're disappearing here in New Zealand as well. Why is that happening? We run, as I said, we're like kids that lose in an amusement park and says, try this, do that. And no one ever, you know, when we invented the car, we didn't make a study on it. What would its effects be in 2 generations? When we invented the personal computer, no one made a study on it. What its effect would be even in 1 generation.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of our technologies upon ourselves, upon our psyche, and our environment is so far out of control. We don't know. This is a big debate now. Did the bees disappear because of pesticides, the cumulative effect of pesticides, or some other more mysterious factor?
Mm-hmm.
There was a show about the bees on the Animal Discovery Channel, and there was a quote attributed to Einstein, which said, Einstein said that when the bees disappear, then there'll be only 4 more years for the human race.
Is that
now,
what
the bees said? Disappear this year, and next year is 2008. 4 more years takes it to 2012. The point is, we are looking at the end of time as we know it, the end of the world as we know it. And things are going to be coming more and more out of shape. So it's time to get ourselves spiritually straight.
Yeah.
And take responsibility and see what we can do to salvage some semblance of spiritual truth and reality to survive into 2013.
Jose, what do you think then, individual actions? In other words, the entire system is one of chaos and disequilibrium right now, so people must be able to do things to help themselves and their fellows. I mean, advice?
We just have to be taking our own responsibility for our own lives and taking our own lives in our own hands and basically, I think, getting into forming our own cultures and communities with those people that we know, we trust, and who understand, like, this is the situation that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, another question. I speak German, and in the German language, there's a word that's called Ursprache. And
mm-hmm.
And it's
primal language.
Yes, I'd like you to talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, all the traditions say that originally we were one being, and we came as one race, or we came from one place. Our DNA shows that we're more connected as a species than virtually any other species. Even though it seems that we have black people and white people and yellow people and brown people and so on. Originally, and this gets also to the Tower of Babel type of thing, originally it says that we came from one soul and that the soul then multiplied and we came to a place then of what you might call the primal forgetting. But up to the time of the primal forgetting, we spoke one language, this Ursprach that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
This is a telepathic language. This is what's called fundamentally the telepathic language of trust. One thing that we have lost totally in this world, particularly in countries like the United States, is trust. There's no trust. Instead of trust, we have massive, horrendous security systems. Everybody's afraid. Everybody's projecting fear. And it's becoming more and more intolerable to travel on international flights or go through airports. And we've lost the trust. You know, we have just allowed this process to escalate. And when you lose the trust, then you're on the final stages of Babel and of Babylon, where as far from the ore stock as you can get.
Hmm.
Well, we think that when we get past this threshold of 2012, that we will also be experiencing a quantum shift of our own consciousness and synchronization with higher orders of reality, which you might call cosmic civilization. The cosmic civilization operates on a telepathic system, and therefore operates on a cosmic trust system, and operates by a type of universal language, which we will once again begin to understand. And that happens only because we are in community. Talk about the bees. The bees live in community. How do they maintain their community? How do they build their hives? How do they know what to do? They don't have grammars and dictionaries and encyclopedias and internet. They have system, instinctual system of knowing and communication with each other. And that's their Ursprach. So we have lost that, and now we're paying the consequences for having lost it. We've created a huge, as I said, babble of internet with 600 billion web pages, but we don't have peace, we don't have unity, we have fear and intolerance. And so we have to move out of this. We have to begin to cultivate infinite love, infinite patience, infinite tolerance, and infinite trust and cooperation. We have to restore that ourselves, and we have to show at least that we have the willingness to restore that to ourselves so that the higher orders of reality can understand that at least some of us are trying.
Hmm. And is the galactic core, the center of our galaxy, related to this whole business?
Yeah. Well, I think that when we talk about the galactic core, we're talking about a intelligence, what you might call almost like an intelligence frequency transmitter that is continuously sending out waves of plasmas, of high frequency beams, of higher dimensional structures that are being emanated from this galactic core. It's these beams, these higher dimensional frequency structures that are emanated out from the core affect the different solar systems and planetary fields, and they actually have much to do with the instigation of different evolutionary cycles and of what you might call the upgrading of the mental programming of the different systems within the whole galactic field. So at this point, and since 1987, actually, we have been experiencing an increase of frequencies from this galactic core, which the Mayans, ancient Mayans, defined or called the Hunab-Ku, the one giver of movement and measure. And we have been receiving new information streams, new knowledge streams, that to those who are actually clear and receptive, that these streams of information are hooking them up to higher dimensional levels of communication and intelligence, and providing what you might call some guidance to the system at this point.
Remarkable. All right, Dr. Arguelles, it is about 4 minutes before the top of the hour here. I would normally take a break, but because we're only going to do an hour interview, I will ask you if you'd like to consider sticking around for a little bit longer. Certainly the listeners are all screaming at me to ask, and certainly that you're under no obligation, but I will put it out there and offer you some more time if you'd like to talk further. If not, we've got a few more minutes, and you could sort of wrap it up with anything that you'd like to.
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to have to wrap it up, Mike.
No problem.
I appreciate the people who like to have me speak longer, but I think that if you hear clearly what I'm saying, you'll get the picture, you'll get the message. We really are in a position where I think the major issues, how we take responsibility for our own lives and for our own minds, for our own thoughts, for our own actions, and for our own words. We live in a very, very fast-paced world where we're not only adding 10,000 blogs a day, but each of us is bombarded by at least 10,000 images a day.
Mm-hmm.
And so our discriminatory powers are tending to be somewhat weakened in this process, and we all have to kind of like take time to remove ourselves a little bit from this world in whatever way we can, even if we're living in a modern life type of situation, of actually taking the time in our own lives to not be on the internet, not be on the television, mm-hmm. to just sit quietly with ourselves and with the great unknown, with the supreme creator, or however we want to call this, and see if we can come into contact with our own divine primal essence. I think that's more important, because when it all starts coming down, what's going to matter is what kind of relationship we have to our own divine essence. Have we been able to contact ourselves? Have we actually been able to be honest and truthful with ourselves? Have we been able to really clear ourselves away from the whole welter of images and slogans and marketing cliches that bombard us and seek to overwhelm us and to capture our souls with slogans and ways of thinking that have actually nothing to do with our own true essence, with our own nature, with the truth of cosmic reality. We are really, really, in our essence, cosmic beings. We are truly, in our deepest essence, aspiring to come into the highest and greatest cosmic consciousness, to expand in great, great waves of radiating love and compassion. And this is what we want in our truth. But our minds are so dazed and so overwhelmed by the different patterns of thought and marketing that we really need to each have the courage to take the time to withdraw from this world at least some moments a day, hours a day, do something different on the weekend. But we really have to take time out and to come into contact with our own essence. And in that essence, in the very, very great stillness of our own mind, see what other voices we can hear.
Jose, very quickly, you mentioned Terence McKenna earlier. I mentioned Maria Sabina. Without a long answer required, do you have a position on the visionary plants?
Well, you know, they represent a stage, I think, in the evolutionary process for some people. They're there, and that's what they have to use. And there's no question that there have been particular stages in the life of our culture that those medicinal plants opened doors of perception for us. I think that the problem is that we, as I said, we have a lack of discriminatory mind.
Yes.
And so we have to be very, very cautious in the use of that and the conditions of the use, and realize that all they're doing is opening doors to our own infinite divine potential. We are each an infinite root. We are each a cosmic vibratory root. Sometimes these medicinal plants help us reach that, but once we reach it, we have to realize that was only an instrument, a door that was open. But now we have to be alone with what it is, with the actual essence of our nature, and that we have to be thankful that if we reached it through those means, we have to be thankful, and then we have to be thankful that we have reached our essence, and then commune with that alone.
It's a wonderful answer. Thank you so much. Dr. Arguelles, I can't tell you what a pleasure it has been, or I will tell you what a pleasure it has been. It has been a tremendous pleasure, and I thank you so much, and I honor you for the work that you're doing and that you've done for all of these years, and just know that there are a lot of people that are tuning in to all of this stuff, and you're very welcome here, and we all love you, and thank you very much for your work.
Yeah, I feel your heart very, very sincerely, Mike, and I very much appreciate the opportunity, and sending out all my love to everybody and wishing everybody the highest and the best, and that everybody can come to some real genuine understanding of what is actually going on. God bless you and take care.
And to you. Take care, Jose.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, Jose Antonio Arguelles, Valum Votan, thank you so much. It's Mike. You've been listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.